Hello, hello. This is Fernando Fiore, El Presidente, and you are listening to the Mouths of the South podcast on VerySouthTucker.com. Yole.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast. Matt Doyle joining us now on the Mouths of the South podcast.
And Alexi Lalas joins us right now,
bringing you the best coverage of Atlanta United FC. Paul Tenorio joining us now. Kristen Hennage on the Mouths of the South podcast.
The president of Atlanta United FC, Darren Eels.
Happy to have Doug Robertson on the Mouths of the South podcast. AJC writer for Atlanta United. The biggest names and exclusive interviews on the Mouths of the South podcast.
I'll do it again soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
Let's go. Mouths of the South podcast, Dirty South Soccer. Thanks to our sponsor, CrossFit Vesuvio, our sponsor for the podcast for the foreseeable future. With me is Sam Franco. Sam, what's going on?
What is going on, Eric? How are you on this fine Monday evening?
We are also on the Facebook. Oh, I'm good. Sorry, I didn't mean to just skip over that question. No, I'm good. I'm actually, for those that are going to be watching on the Facebook Live on Dirty South Soccer's Facebook page, I'm actually dressed in, like, business attire because I actually just got a new job, and so I had to actually dress up and put on a shirt and tie and all that good stuff. So, I mean, it kind of sucks, to be honest, because I'd rather not be doing that, but...
Yeah, dressing up is terrible.
But, you know, it's fun. It's fun. It's going to be a good job. Anyways, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was pretty good. You know, obviously the game went well on Saturday for Atlanta United's terms. Wasn't the... most Joga Bonito game to watch or anything like that. But Atlanta United did what they needed to do and finally broke down that bus that was parked very firmly. So Atlanta United did a good job. And outside of that, I mean, it was AFFest here in Athens.
Oh, is that why you had to take off a little early?
Say that again?
Is that why you had to take off a little early?
No, Saturday? No. Saturday, I actually rode down with some buddies for here from Athens, and so they were just wanting to get back like right after the game. So that's why I did not stick around for post game like I normally do. But Friday went around to Athens, and then yesterday I did absolutely nothing. I think I went out and like bought a new golf polo, and that was it. That was like the only thing I did all day. So it was nice to have kind of a lazy Sunday there.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so I want to start with something more fun than anything else, but we got to talk about the Atlanta United Facebook page. Atlanta United fans on Facebook, that Facebook page. I think everyone knows what I'm talking about. I swear.
Atlanta United FC fans.
Yeah, I swear. At some point, that Facebook page is going to start a war, man. Like, even though it consists of nothing but Atlanta United fans, it's going to somehow start World War III. That Facebook page by itself, there's no if or ands or buts about it. It's going to start something tragic in the near future because that I've never seen so – the spectrum of opinions is quite honestly some of the funniest and kind of depressing because you think, wow, either some people really know what they're talking about or some people really don't know what they're talking about. There is almost no in-between in that entire Facebook group.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, people definitely like to, act like the sky is falling if something bad happens or if, you know, one player does one good thing, people like to act like they're the next Leo Messi or something. So it's definitely overreaction central.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think the perfect example this week is everything that's gone around Anton Walks. And just the difference of opinions between the seemingly, and we'll get to it later, everyone on Facebook Live. Don't worry about answering that now. But my gosh, just the discussion on him alone has seemingly gone, you know, either way. There's no in between, and you're either, you know, you either think he did great, and the next response is that you're dumb for thinking he did great, or you think he did bad, and the next response is you're dumb for thinking he did bad. But anyways. Let's talk about the game itself. You know, we knew Colorado was more than likely going to just sit back and bunker, and that's exactly what they did. We were all kind of surprised at that lineup that they trotted out. It was a rather inexperienced lineup for the most part, and, I mean, the only real guy of, you know, one of the, really the only player of note was Tim Howard, who, I guess... It's easy when shots are kind of hit right at you as a goalkeeper. It makes your job a lot easier. Not saying that, you know, Atlanta United was trying to shoot it right at him, but I think they maybe could have done a better job in some of their shot selections. But You look at that game and what they did and what Atlanta United has, you know, traditionally this year, at least in their inaugural year, has had trouble doing against teams at Bunker. And I thought they did a pretty good job, specifically in that second half.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's funny, you know, Josh not with us tonight, but he did share the link to the heat maps from this game. And if you look at Atlanta United and what they did in terms of getting forward, I mean, you know, they had the ball all over the field. And a lot of the times the ball, at least the, you know, the hottest part of the field for Atlanta United was in the, you know, Colorado side of the field. Whereas if you look at Colorado's heat map, the hottest part was in their own 6-yard box.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just tells you that obviously the intention of Colorado was not to get forward. They saw Atlanta United's attack. You know, you see Martinez, you see Assad, you see Almiron, you see Villalba, and Colorado, who was without some guys, you know, maybe just kind of thought, hey, you know, we're going to try and get out of Bobby Dodd with a 0-0 draw. And the way Tim Howard was playing, it looked like that might end up being the case because he had some incredible saves. But luckily for Atlanta United, Joseph Martinez was able to finally put one past him and give Atlanta the win. But certainly Atlanta did a very good job of eventually cracking that armor, so to speak.
Tata Martino basically said that he did not think that Atlanta United played well in that first half. And I couldn't point to specifically what it was, but once that second half started, you could see that the creativity picked up, the pressure picked up, the types of runs they went on picked up. They got more. It was calculated risk in terms of some of the balls they played. They just pressured Colorado so much harder to begin that second half and throughout that second half. It was something that. I mentioned last week that I'm like I, at halftime that I hope that he would. I hope Tata was chewing some butts out because that's how bad they were playing in the first half against against DC United,
right?
And that's sort of the reaction I was looking for. What you saw out of Atlanta United in the second half was sort of the same kind of reaction I was looking for, and we got exactly that. I mean, they could have easily put this game away early in that second half. Unfortunately, I mean, you got to get credit Colorado. They did exactly what they wanted to do. Their game plan was to stay in this game as long as they could, see if they couldn't, you know, make it a 0-0 game and get a point out of that, maybe steal one at the end, and they almost did. They did exactly what they wanted to do. And it was up to Atlanta United to break that back line, break that you know, basically all 11 players, unlock that defense, and it wasn't until the 67th minute. And we saw the same thing. I think I tweeted out at one point during the game. We saw this is the same exact game that we saw when Chicago was playing, or when Atlanta United was playing Chicago the first time at Bobby Dodd with 10 men. And I understand that it's one less guy on the field, but it's the same concepts. It's still hard to unlock a 10-man wall, basically, a 10-man bus. And it wasn't until the 67th minute, and it wasn't until late in the Chicago game the first time that Atlanta United finally scored. And it was, again, the foot of Joseph Martinez that did it. I was impressed at the ways they were able to unlock that back line and do different things to start that second half. I think that's something they need to kind of work on and make sure that's a lot more consistent when playing against teams at Bunker.
Well, and I know we'll get into this a little later, but you know, Atlanta wasn't able to crack the code, so to speak, until Brandon Vasquez came on for Tito Villalba. And it's funny because we've kind of seen, and I don't want to go too far into it because I know we're going to talk about Tito a little later, but it's just interesting how a guy like Tito has really shown, I don't want to say he's a one-trick pony, but...
Oh, I'll say it. I'll say it. You won't say it, but I'll say it.
Okay, well, he's played much, much, much better centrally than out wide. And it's crazy because you would think that Tito, with his skill set and his speed, would be very much a good wide player, whereas a guy like Brandon Vasquez, you think he would be much more of a player that is comfortable playing centrally. But Vasquez came in, and I think I said this to you, and Gressel did end up coming into the game for Joseph Martinez, but it might not have been you. It might have been somebody that I was sitting near in the press box. But when Vasquez came on, I'm like, why isn't it Gressel here? Well, Vasquez came in and played very well out wide, which, again, is a little kind of a surprise just because you would think he'd be better centrally. He doesn't necessarily look like he would have the skill set to be a wide player, but I mean, without his cross in and his good play out wide, you know, Atlanta United probably doesn't score. So, again, like I said, we'll probably hone in on Tito a little more later, but this game didn't do anything to help his status as a regular in the first team.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I looked at that game, and for as much crap as Walks got in that game, for what I thought was a really good game from him, considering he didn't find out that he was going to be playing in this game until the technical talk that they had. I don't know what point they had it during the before the game, but that was when he found out he was officially playing. Considering he played, in my opinion, as well as he did, I know there's differing opinions out there. The fact that Vijayalabha is not getting crapped on even more is beyond me, because he was horrible. He had so many moments where he could have affected the game positively for Atlanta and fumbled it away. He still has trouble finding ways to get around defenders one-on-one. And it's not that there were at least, I want to say, two or three occasions where he was one-on-one. All he had to do was get around the defender, and he was in a position to make his team even more dangerous. Either he could have put a low cross in across the box, or he could have gone straight to goal. And instead, he finds ways to lose the ball in those moments.
Having speed like he does doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be good with the ball at your feet. And that's kind of what we've seen from him. Yes, he can run at defenders, but like you just said, he kind of loses the ball a lot because he's not really technically good with the ball at his feet.
He loses it too much. If he's not running into open space, he might get lucky every now and then. But, I mean, you look at Vasquez, who comes in and I tried to be critical about Vasquez because I wanted to give him that fair treatment that I've been giving Vijayalabha. And at first, initially, I said, all right, he had that one good moment. And then I started seeing the runs he was making. And then I started seeing the different plays he was able to make at the top of the box to get that header back into Martinez, who almost bicycle kicks it for, you know, the goal of the week.
Right.
It's those moments that he makes his team more dangerous that I was more impressed with than even I was impressed with the fact that he beat his man, got the ball into Joseph and score, and, you know, Joseph does the rest. But it's the other things that he did well that impressed me even more, or that elevated my impression of him altogether. It's the stuff that Vijayalabha hasn't been able to do. I think that Vijayalabha had some good moments, some positive moments in this game, but I think there was more negative than there were positive. I think he knew it too, because he got up. Once he got subbed out, he was on the bench. It looked like he was sulking. I think he knows that, you know, I need to contribute more. I need to find ways to give more to this team than just utilizing my speed in open space.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I think one thing that we've discovered through the first part of the season with Atlanta United is that, you know, at least you know that if Joseph Martinez is hurt, or he's not going to play in a game for some reason, or he needs to be subbed off, you've got a player in Tito Vijayalabha that can score goals and play through the center. So I think that's the positive you take. And again, I don't want to just say he's useless, because he's not. He's proven that he can score some goals, but we have seen there are much better options out wide, particularly Julian Gressel and maybe Brandon Vasquez. I think there's still a lot to be seen from Brandon Vasquez. We haven't seen him in, you know, a lot of game time, but that one small sample size we got from this past Saturday, he looked really good in that spot.
What we saw out of Gressel on that right side was consistency. What we're starting at least early to see out of Vasquez is, I mean, you saw him in US Open Cup, and he was pretty good. He wasn't super. He was an all-star. Obviously, he scored, but he wasn't, you know, super all-star. And then we see him in this game do the same sort of things he did in the U.S. Open Cup on a rather bigger stage. You know, consider however you want to consider the opponent, but he was in a bigger stage. What we need to see now from Vasquez is that consistency. He did have some bad moments, but the good outweighed the bad, and not just in the assist he had, but in the other moments he was able to contribute in this game. And I think the same goes for I'm amazed that people think Walks was terrible, because I only saw, and if you want to add this to something on the Facebook live chat, we'll get to that right now. Anything on Walks at this point? If you thought he was bad, please point to specific moments you thought he was bad, specific times where you thought he was bad. Give me the exact minute you thought he was bad in every occasion. But I just thought he wasn't asked to do much defensively. And I think the moments he was asked to do things defensively, he did fine. He did as good, if not better, than Mears. And when he was asked to go forward, I thought he added so much. He was, I saw one guy say, and I forget who it was at this point, but that he was so out of position all the time. And I just kept thinking, what? He was in perfect position practically the entire game. He seemed to know everything. He seemed to know exactly where he needed to go to contribute to the attack. And he put in better crosses than Mears did. He had better. He set up his teammates a little bit better than Mears has in the past. Outside of the one, you know, the first assist to on the first goal for Atlanta United to Assad, he had one through ball to Tito that was, I think it was Tito, that was fantastic. He had a good game. All his teammates said he had a good game. Tata said he had a good game. They're not saying that he's the immediate sub for Tyrone Mears, but he's not the immediate starter now over Tyrone Mears, but they are saying that he did have a good game. He contributed highly to what Atlanta United wanted to do in this game. Now, he also wasn't asked to do much defensively, honestly. He had maybe two or three moments where he was really asked to do stuff defensively. In that first half, he was asked to do more than that second half, especially early in that first half. And I thought he did fine. It would be good to see him against a team like Columbus Crew, maybe not next week or this coming up Saturday, but later down the road, a team like Columbus Crew, a team that can actually attack, it'd be good to see how he looks then, because that's a whole different animal. But I thought in the situation, in the performance he was asked to put against a team like Colorado, he was fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm not, like, going goo-goo gaga over the guy, but I also don't – I think he was fine. I think that he definitely didn't really have any of those kind of, you know, head-in-hands moments that we've seen out of Tyrone Mears at times this year. But, you know, I also didn't think that he, you know, did anything that really changed the game. Again, because, like you said, it's hard to – really gauge what a defender does against a team like Colorado that isn't really doing anything going forward.
Yeah, and some people are wondering whether this is initially reported as a 6-month loan. It's actually a year-long loan. I've confirmed it with the team officially, so it's he's going to be here for the rest of the season. I think he officially goes. He's officially done with Atlanta United on the 31st of this year. So he's here the entire year, and he's a great, I think, backup. I think he's a great a depth piece to this team. He's a guy that I think could eventually take over for Mears if Mears doesn't get better, doesn't progress. I'm really hoping that all it takes for Mears to get back on track is, you know, the rest he got. I'm fairly certain he's not going to play in the U.S. Open Cup, so he's going to have essentially an entire week of rest, which will be good for him, good for his legs. He's on the older side. He needs that rest.
Well, I think now that a big question is with that right back position, you know, because like you said, Walks is a loan, so he's not going to be at Atlanta United past the end of this year. So obviously Tyrone Mears isn't the future at that position. Do we start to see Bloom a little more? Or with the transfer window opening up, I mean, does Atlanta United try to go out and get someone? I don't know how much real roster freedom / salary cap freedom this team has to even go out and try and make a move like that if they could. But, you know, that's certainly a position, and really the main position other than maybe center back where Atlanta United could use some help. I think, obviously, Garza's done a great job at locking down that left-back position, and LGP is a solid center back. But, you know, Michael Parkhurst has been kind of shaky at times, and we've just spent a bunch of time talking about the right-back position. So do you think Atlanta United possibly are at least – kind of putting out some feelers there to see if there's any players they can bring in the defense that can help kind of bolster that back line?
See, I think if anything, they might be looking for, I don't know. It's tough to tell with this team, because I don't think unless there's an obvious superior right back.
Right.
I don't think they're going to get it. I don't think they're going after anyone that's not a depth piece, because I don't know what void you really have on this team that can be get better in the transfer window.
Yeah, that's not this like just plug and play fix right now.
Right. I mean,
unless there's something we don't know about.
Almiron is going to play no matter what. Carmona, and I don't know who you're going to find is better than him that it's willing to come to Atlanta. Larenowitz is the same way. I don't know who you're going to find that's better than him right now that'll come to Atlanta. I'm
sure
well,
that's why I was
I'm sure,
talking about the back line, though, because, yeah, right. Obviously the guys in the attack and the midfield have been fine. There's been really no problem there other than, you know, Tito Vijalba, as you like to put it, underperforming.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think there's anyone that's going to be willing to come to Atlanta that's going to be better than what we already have now. Yep. Garza's going to start. Whether you think he's good or bad, he's going to start because in Tata's eyes, he's been great.
But who? Yeah, I was going to say, who thinks Garza's been bad?
The Atlanta United fan page, whatever the hell it's called.
Back to the Facebook page.
You see it everywhere. I wish I could have a more scientific, you know, answer to that. But that's honestly what it is. And I mean, we're basing a lot of this conversation off of the fans' opinion. So I just don't think.
Voice of the fans.
You could find someone probably that's better than Mears. I don't know that he's going to be willing to come to Atlanta for less than what Mears. That's the other thing. You have to factor in the money, which we don't.
Well, that's what I was getting.
We're not privy to. But at the same time, I don't think that it's that grave a need. I don't think he's been. I think Mears himself has been bad. I don't think that we need to go out and find some like an emergency right back right now or when the transfer window opens. I just don't think it's necessary. I think that's not the reason we're going to, you know, lose games going throughout. That's not the reason we'll drop out of the playoff spot, is that one position alone. He's not that bad. He's not bad enough to cost Atlanta United, you know, dozens of points throughout the course of the rest of the season. And neither is Walks, neither is, you know, Bloom. I don't think it doesn't benefit Atlanta United to go pay someone else to play a position you're already, you know, one or two deep.
Right.
And that's why I don't think it's going to happen. I honestly don't see anything outside of a depth piece. If you're going to go find someone that can replace Almirón in terms of his technical ability being that number 10, fine. But you already got Kratz. I think, sure, maybe Parkhurst, but you got Miles Robinson. Who's made the 18 a few times?
Well, and look, obviously, I mean, Miguel Almirón is in the lineup until Atlanta United decides to sell him. So,
well, yeah, and I'm not suggesting they should sell him, but my point is, there's no void on this team that's obvious enough to where you need to go get a piece to substitute that player out.
See, I don't necessarily agree. I mean, I think that Parkhurst is a veteran player enough to where I think he can get over maybe some bad games, but I really do think right back has been an issue, and if they could, I agree with you. I don't necessarily know if there's anyone right off the bat you could just go get, but no, I certainly think that's a position that definitely needs at least to be looked at and to be thought about. Is there a better option?
All right, for people on the Facebook Live chat, Walks is on he's going to be here the entire year. He is not leaving in 6 months. It's not a 6 month loan. It wasn't a 6 month loan. It's a loan for the entire year. That is fact. I have confirmed it with Atlanta United. It has been misreported the entire time from the beginning. I'm telling you, you can take that to the grave. you can bet the house on that.
That has been confirmed.
It has been confirmed. Why we're still talking about it, I don't know. You mentioned Parkhurst, who I agree has been struggling, and we're going to get to the positives about Atlanta United's win over Colorado in a second, but Parkhurst is another guy that's been struggling. His communication or his understanding with his back passes to Can have been something, at least the last couple of weeks, have been a little off. I thought he wasn't that bad, but he also wasn't pressured enough to really look all that bad. I thought the fact that they were playing Colorado was perfect for him because he's never going to look bad against a team that really can't push forward. Between him and Perez, here's the thing. Both of our center backs have got to, honestly, to me, more than anything, have to start connecting better passes. Perez at the beginning of the season was great at these long balls over the top, and seemingly that he's gotten away from that. I don't know if it's been mandated by Tata or he just hasn't felt comfortable, but it's like half the passes coming out of that position, whether it's Lorenowitz, whether it's Parkhurst, whether it's Perez, have all been half those passes have been weak or have been straight to the opponent or have caused or have been passed in a manner that leads to a counter or a turnover in the midfield. And that's got to change. That's the one thing. Even Tata said that the one thing at the midway point of the season is we have to be more comfortable playing out of the back. We're fine with the high press. We're fine going forward. We have to look more comfortable playing out of the back or circulating the ball in the back. That's the one thing he harped on. It was Doug Robertson that asked the question. And it was a great question. It was a great answer because that's the one thing everyone notices is that we look so uncomfortable. We look so like panicky when we're passing the ball around the back. And that's the one thing he says that I agree. I don't think it's a mystery to anyone. That's the one thing they got to work on moving forward.
Well, I think the one thing also when you're talking about playing from the back is the distribution from the goalkeeper. And look, I think Alakan has been fine. I think that he obviously made a mistake there in the game against DC United. So yes, he's had some bad moments, but I will say that shot stopping ability and things like that, he's far exceeded my expectations. But that being said, one thing we know that Brad Guzan's pretty good at is distribution out of the back. And, you know, he's got a very strong arm to kind of throw out some outlet passes and things like that. So that's the thing. Like, will Atlanta United be able to play better out of the back with a goalkeeper that is a little better at distribution, you know, and will that make the back line a little bit more comfortable?
I mean, we'll see. But, I mean, it's I'm excited to see him in the Gold Cup because it seems like that'll be a good position. I think he's going to be the number one. I don't see who else would be. But it's going to be interesting to see him with this, you know, more inexperienced, the B team, basically, the more inexperienced group of U.S. men's national team players, how he kind of manages that because he's going to be thrown into, it's going to be a similar situation to what he'll be thrown into with Atlanta United. It'll be a new team. It'll be a players he's not super accustomed to playing with, you know, on that back line, at least on a regular basis, I would assume. But let's see how he handles that. Let's see how he organizes that back line because that may make the difference. That is one thing that he does, I think, maybe a little bit better than can, is that you visibly see him barking out orders. You visibly see him barking out anything to his back line to make them more organized. He immediately places blame and, well, he immediately barks after he's scored on to whoever is at fault. And maybe that's what this team, at least in the back, needs. I also think that with a guy like Perez, you might have to be careful with that kind of stuff because he seems like a guy that could turn around and punch him in the face.
Yeah, and that's one. That's probably Alec Can's biggest, well, I don't want to say it's his biggest weakness, but it's certainly not the strongest part of his game is that kind of leadership in the back, that yelling and getting defenders in the right position and things like that. He's a very withdrawn guy. So, like you said, maybe Brad Guzan comes in and does things a little differently. But one thing about Brad Guzan now is that with him getting called to the Gold Cup, obviously Atlanta United's going to have to wait even longer now for him to be kind of brought into the team. And
oh, I mean, that I don't care about. They have a break during the Gold Cup, so that's not going to make that big of a difference.
Well, but it'll make a little bit of a difference. I'm just saying it'll be a little bit longer of a wait. But I think that it is nice that they have that two-week break, though. But obviously, I think Brad Guzan is a keeper that we know what we're going to get from him. And I'm not sure that the fan base still knows what you're going to get from Alec Can on a week-to-week basis, other than the fact that he has proven to be a very good shot stopper.
The other thing that I think I want to mention, and sorry that for the Villalba apologists, but I think he can't be assumed as an automatic starter anymore. I think if I'm Tata Martino, I'm letting him feel it a little bit. You've got Gressel, who has performed better than him on the right side. You're not putting Villalba over Jose Martinez. You've got Vasquez, who's kind of, again, I need to see more consistent. I'm not saying he's not playing great, but I need to see more consistency out of what he's doing. A lot like what we've seen of Jose Martinez, a lot like what we've seen of Yamil Assad. Consistency is key. You can have moments, but if those moments are every other game or once in a blue moon, then you know you're no good to this team, you know, starting consistently on that right side. But I do think that it's either Gressel or Vasquez. I think it'll be Vasquez in the U.S. Open Cup. I have no idea what's going to happen in Columbus, but if you want to claim it as we want to give Villalba a break, we want to put him in the last 30 minutes or so in place of Gressel, we want to start Gressel and take him out after 60, fine. Claim that it's just to give him a rest, but you can't assume that he's the automatic starter going forward on that right side because he just hasn't been playing that way. And it's this will be how I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it'd be good for Tata Martino to prove what he said earlier in the year that it doesn't matter. And he specifically mentioned this one in regards to, I want to say it was Guzan, but I want to see him test the, I want to see him tested on the idea that the money you make on this team doesn't matter. The fact that you're a DP, if you're not performing, you're going to sit. I want to see that tested. I want to see him actually, you know, put his money where his mouth is and start Gressel or Villalba because Villalba is struggling right now on that right side. I don't know that's going to happen. I hope it does because I think that also makes Villalba better. He works harder. I think he knows that he struggles in 1v1 situations. He struggles in that final third on that right side. If he's not running on into space, he's we said it early, he's kind of a one-trick pony. I think he's got to work to get away from that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think right now that of all the options we've seen, I would like to see Gressel out on that right side. He's been the most consistent of anybody that's played out there. And if Villalba can be kind of a guy that is a super sub and, you know, comes in the 60th, 65th minute and runs at tired defenders, I mean, I think that that can only serve to help Atlanta United. So, again, I think that if Atlanta United can figure out the best role for Tito Villalba on this team and what that is, whether it's sticking through and trying to get him right and get him in the right, you know, form to play out wide, or just using him kind of centrally as a backup option to Josef Martinez. I think that at this point, if you're Tata Martino, you've got to know what you want to do with him. So I agree with you. I don't think that Villalba should be considered a surefire starter anymore. And I think that Tata is definitely going to need to use the U.S. Open Cup game and this next game against Columbus to continue to try to figure that out.
What do you think of Almirón and Martinez? I mean, they seem to be like the ultimate pairing in MLS right now, or at least one of the top pairings in MLS.
They seem to have an understanding of each other that you wouldn't think this early in their playing together and this early as being teammates that they would have been able to develop that chemistry so quickly. And I think you've got to give Tata Martino a lot of credit for that, obviously, as the manager and the guy that puts people in these situations. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. But the relationship, and you see it, you know, on social media, these guys hang out with each other. All the South American players seem to be pretty tight-knit on this team. And I would say that definitely shows on the field between Miguel Almirón and Josef Martinez. This wasn't Almiron's best game, but to be fair, when the other team
is tough,
bunkering down like that and not really attempting to play any sort of attacking style, then those spaces that Almirón needs to work in just aren't going to be there as much.
Yeah, if you clog up that middle, the center of the field, you really leave this team kind of handicapped because you take away Almirón and where he's at his best, and that's in the middle of the field. I thought that really opened up in the second half, and they were able to kind of, again, unlock that back line, unlock the defense as a whole. And then they found ways to get crosses in through the box, sometimes all the way through the box. They found ways to get the ball to Josef. They got more creative, and that's what I like to see against a team that bunkers, because, again, we're going to run into this again. We're going to run into teams at bunker. And I thought most of the attacking players, almost all of them, had a great game in sense, especially in that second half. And it changed when it came to their creativity and finding ways, you know, quicker passes, moving the ball faster, switching the field, switching the point of attack altogether. It was things like that. It was whatever Tata Martino said at halftime that really lit a fire under them and opened up things in that final third, which was really missing in that first half, at least I thought. I mean, they did well to get into the final third in the first half, but what was missing was that creativity. I mean, again, I hate just crapping on Villalba, but as soon as he got taken out, you saw the immediate impact Vasquez made. And he's not a guy that should be making that kind of an impact right off the bench at 18 years old over a guy like Villalba, who you're paying to be that guy, the guy that makes an impact on that right side.
Right, and this game is just really hard to judge anybody on just because of that anti-soccer that we saw out of Colorado. I mean, when a team is going to do that, and you see that a lot in, like, the Champions League and sort of the later rounds, and I know Jose Mourinho teams have been very much accused of this, that park the bus style where they just play anti-soccer or anti-football, as it's called, where you're not really trying to do anything other than frustrate the other team. And, you know, a lot of people whine and bitch about that, but I think that you've got to do what's best for your team to get points, to win games. And if Colorado's and you know, if their best thought in going into this game and Pablo Mastroianni's best thoughts going into this game were, hey, I don't think we can really do anything, so we're just going to try and get out of there with a point. Yeah, that's going to tick off a lot of people that were watching the game, but at the same time, you know, he's got to do what's best for his team. And I think that just the way that they played, it's just so hard to judge anything that any of the Atlanta United attacking players did, because there wasn't a whole lot of space for them to move with, other than giving Brandon Vasquez a lot of credit for being able to pick out Joseph Martinez in the box. You know, outside of that, there just wasn't a whole lot to really go on from this.
See,
game.
I look at when it comes to judging those attacking players, I look at the chances created, because obviously they only scored one, and, you know, credit to Colorado again. But the chances created were plenty, and those chances. You get the ball in the box and you're immediately surrounded by four guys. Yeah, it's going to be tough to score, and that's honestly what happened. But it's how you get that ball into the box or into positions to score, which was more exciting to me. Look, I think Vishad knew early on that he it was going to be a close game, that it was going to take not a fluky goal, but something kind of crazy to happen to get up early on this team. And you saw him take a shot off the volley that goes over the ball that would have been a fantastic goal to open up the game. That just didn't go in. And that was the kind of chances you saw him taking early in that first half. And I think that's what Tata Martino wanted to get away from. He wanted more control, more patience, more, again, I'll say it again, creativity and kind of assertiveness aggressiveness when it came to passes in that final third, moving that ball quicker. As soon as they started moving that ball quicker in the final third, you saw things change. You saw little pockets of space open up in that final third that allowed them to get shots on goal. It was still tough. I mean, I'm not, again, Colorado went in there doing exactly what they wanted to do. And they, for the most part, for all of basically 2 minutes, they were extremely successful. It took what essentially amounted as a counter, you know, Almion giving a through pass to Vasquez, Vasquez beating his guy one-on-one, and then again finding Joseph. But how many players were already on top of Joseph when he got that ball in the box?
Yeah, no,
there were like four or five of them. And it took a great individual effort from Joseph to score, and eventually he did. And even then, it wasn't the cleanest of shots because it got deflected by one of the Colorado defenders.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, you've got to – a game like this really just proved one thing to me, and that's that Joseph Martinez – and look, this has already been proven, but it just kind of was reaffirmed that Martinez is an extremely reliable striker. And in the box like that, I mean, you've got to have those opportunities against a team like Colorado that's bunkering down. It's like you're not going to get that many of those. And when you do get them, you have to pounce. You have to finish. And Joseph Martinez did that. So really – the one thing that I draw from this is that, you know, Joseph Martinez, A, hasn't lost anything from his injury,
no.
And B, Atlanta United better hope that for the rest of the season that guy stays healthy, because they're going to need him for the long haul, and they're obviously going to be a much better team if Joseph Martinez is consistently playing.
If you got any questions for us on the Facebook live chat, make sure you make it in all caps. That way we can differentiate between the just general conversation in the chat and questions to us. I see that Peterson's getting close to coming back from injury. That's a question. Sorry, I didn't phrase it that way. But we don't really know what's going on with Peterson. Last I saw him was 2 months ago. I was at training, and he was doing the normal conditioning drills. The normal, like, concussion recovery drills. It was light passing and a lot of jogging. That's normally what you do when you're coming back from concussion, is very, very limited stuff. And, you know, you're checking stuff like your heart rate, you're checking stuff like, the level of dizziness, whatever. There are a bunch of different things that you check during those times, and I really don't know what's going on, because that was, I want to say, 2 months ago at this point. And I know that some players, that that injury lingers a lot longer than others. Not every concussion is the same, but at the same time, 2 months, and you're just starting to wonder, what is going on? Is there something else that maybe is going on that we don't know about? Maybe it's something more serious than we're aware of. Let's see. Any more positives from you, Sam?
I mean, like I said, it's just really hard to draw anything from a game like that when the other team just isn't trying to do anything other than hold the line and bunker down and park the bus. So I will say that Atlanta United's defense didn't really have to do anything. I mean, there were a few chances from Colorado, especially the one right at the end of the game, and you got to give Alec Cann a lot of credit for being on his P's and Q's there, because didn't really have to do a whole lot. And sometimes in those kind of games, if you're a goalkeeper, you can kind of be lulled to sleep back there.
I really want someone to crap on his positioning on that one, because that's been like everyone's hate on him. That's what everyone's been crapping on him on. And right. Yet in the most important moment in our latest game, he's in perfect position.
He's right where he needed to
be.
I don't think positioning
has been a problem. I think his back line has been an issue.
At the same time, he was in a pretty poor position on that one long shot that came in and kind of hit the
bar
out of nowhere.
I mean, look, was he though? Because you look at it on TV, that's perfectly placed. That hits off the what looked to me like the corner of the frame.
Yeah, I mean, it was a hell of a strike.
Yeah, I mean, where else do you expect him to be on his line in that situation?
If I remember it correctly, he was maybe a little bit further forward than he needed to be. But that's just me picking nits at that point.
Yeah, no, I thought he was fine. I mean, I look at that and I think, you know, if he scores there, that's lucky goal. That's a great shot from Colorado, and it just happened to go in. I mean, it's not those kind of shots. Even the one that I'm forgetting who did it for Atlanta United. Oh no, it was for the U.S. men's national team. There's a bit of luck that goes into it. There really is. You're catching your keeper off your line. You're catching your keeper in bad positioning, and you're hitting that ball ever so perfectly to send it over him. And in this case, he hit the bar, but. Looking ahead, they got the U.S. Open Cup on Wednesday. They've got Columbus on Saturday. They travel to both places. You look at the U.S. Open Cup roster they put out against Charleston, and I got to assume you're going to see much of the same. I think you're going to see Kratz. You're going to see kind of a newish back line and, you know, guys like Bloom. You might see Ambrose or I think you're going to see Mears just because, well, maybe not. Bloom and Ambrose, Miles Robinson. You might even see Walks back in there at center back. I think you'll see Kratz. I think you've got to start all five international players. I don't know which ones you start, but you got to start all five of them because you're going to need them in a game like this. Miami FC is not a slouch. They are pretty good, and they got an Atlanta favorite and Poku. So, you know, this is a game Atlanta United could very much lose, especially if they're not on point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Miami beat Orlando, and like you mentioned, Poku there is a player that will obviously have a lot of Atlanta United fans and fans of soccer in the state of Georgia waxing nostalgic for, you know, when Poku was playing for the Georgia Revolution / Atlanta Silverbacks. But I think the biggest thing here is just, you know, it's a U.S. Open game. Atlanta United's not going to be playing their strongest lineup, and Miami is going to be doing everything they can to win this game, because every time an NASL or USL team comes up against an MLS squad in this competition, they're going to do whatever they can to try and get the win. And, you know, this is a team managed by a guy in Alessandro Nesta, who is one of the most experienced, obviously defenders in the world, and a guy that, you know, since his retirement has done a pretty good job here with Miami FC. So I certainly think that this game is going to be interesting. You know, you really hope that you get to see guys like Andrew Carlton getting some playing time. I'm very intrigued by who is going to be playing in this game in terms of the Joseph Martinez, the Miguel Almirons. I mean, who do we see from the main, you know, starting 11 that we've come used to seeing, and then who gets sprinkled in?
Well, Carlton didn't play in the U18s in the last game, so I wonder if that's a sign of things to come. I mean, why wouldn't you?
You got to hope so.
Why wouldn't you play your best player?
I think Atlanta United fans are starting to get a little restless on Carlton in terms of not seeing him as much as they probably would have liked.
See, I'm not restless. I'm just kind of.
I'm not. Either.
I'll let Tata make that decision. I mean, it's not like we don't have the players that players are going to play over him because he's so young. Because I mean, I understand that he's raw talent, or he's a really good talent, not raw talent, but he you know, he's still super young. And there's no. This is like the whole conversation we had with Pulisic back in the days. Don't rush him. You don't need to rush him. He's already got a debut. He's playing with the U18s. He's, you know, he's getting minutes with the U.S. men's national team or the youth national team. You know, it's not anything you need to rush him into. Again, he's still young, and he's not gonna over. Just because you start, even if he does well, you're still not starting him over any players. you might see him on the bench a little more, but you're not gonna. He's not ready. In my opinion, and I think that Tata knows that. There's a reason he hasn't been put on the 18 for as long as it's been. He's just not ready. I think the coaching staff for Atlanta United know that. I'm getting hate because of the whole Michael Bradley thing. Someone says, you full-on hate Michael Bradley. Lucky shot. I didn't say it was a lucky shot. I said there's a bit of luck in those kind of shots. That's what I said.
You know about the goal he scored against Mexico?
Yeah, the one that he chipped over the keeper.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
I'm not saying it's a lucky shot. What I am saying is that there's a bit of luck in those shots.
Yeah, it's not like that he didn't mean for that to go in, but yeah, I mean, a lot has to go right for a shot like that to go in, and props to Bradley for looking up and seeing the keeper off his line.
Also, just because someone's saying that he and Kunga both didn't play in the 18s for the U18s today, just because they didn't play doesn't mean they're making the trip to Miami. I'm not saying they're not going to, but just because they didn't play today doesn't mean that they're automatically presumed they're going to be in the 18. Carlton still might not make the trip. I don't imagine that's the case, but Carlton, if either one of those two guys are going to play, it's going to be Carlton. Kunga's not going to play, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean,
not
Kunga
against Miami FC.
You know, just got signed up, and as much as I've kind of been hoping for good things for Okonkwo and Kunga both, I really liked what I saw out of Okonkwo and the limited things I did get to see from him. You know, you want to see those guys at some point, but the main attraction obviously is Andrew Carlton, and if he plays, that is going to make Atlanta United fans very happy. And I also think that he is a player that, as that homegrown signing, is somebody that you know, Atlanta United fans are always going to want to see a little more.
Yep. So we'll have to see how that goes. Columbus is still, what, 6 days away?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's too far away.
We'll talk about that on Thursday. We'll get a podcast out on Thursday. But, you know, cover a recap in the U.S. Open Cup and that match. We're going to be – that's one that I'm more nervous about than I was against Charleston. Even down early in that game, I'm still more nervous about this game than I was Charleston. Just because they do have the talent to beat Atlanta United. And Atlanta United, again, isn't going to send out their A team. They're going to sprinkle in some of their A team with most of their B team, and we're going to have to hope that what I want to see is Zach Lloyd. I want to see more of Zach Lloyd. I was very impressed with what he did in against Charleston. I want to see more of him. I feel like he fits what Tata wants in a right back. And he could be very, I mean, he looked like the, you know, Greg Garza just on the other side. And that's what was impressive. You have two Greg Garzas. Why wouldn't you? I mean, both of them play that system, play that role, play that position exactly the way Tata wants.
Yeah, no, I think that Lloyd's a guy that you definitely want to see a little bit more of. And quite frankly, I think that, you know, I don't know if Alec Cann's going to start this game or not, but, you know, I think some Atlanta United fans might like to see what else Atlanta United has in that position, just because this is a game that, again, is going to be one where you're seeing a lot of mid-level and not first-team guys playing. So, you know, does that mean a Tambakis gets a game? You know, does that mean that, you know, Alec Cann gets a rest? And that's the thing. He's a keeper, so rest isn't as important. But still, if anything,
you're putting out Reynish. You're not putting out Tambakis.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Reynish is also a possibility, but I'm just saying that, you know, do we see a different goalkeeper? We have not seen – actually, I mean, since the season has started, we have not seen anybody but Alec Cann in goal for Atlanta United. So,
and that's fine. I mean, you're not – I'm not
– Yeah, it's fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it'd be interesting to see somebody else.
All right. Brian Reynolds asked, what's your grade for the halfway point of the season?
I mean, I'll probably go B+. I mean, I think that – there's some things that need to be improved, obviously, but this is an expansion team. You got to keep that in mind, and it's an expansion team that has really given a lot of good MLS teams fits. I mean, it's very hard to go to Portland and get a draw. It's very hard to go to Toronto and get a draw. Same with Seattle. So, I mean, Atlanta United did very good work in going to some very hostile environments and bringing back a point and stopping the home team from taking all, you know, maximum points from those games. So I think Atlanta United's done a very good job. I still think on the road there are some things left to be desired in terms of consistency. I think it'll be interesting to watch the Columbus game on Saturday to see if Atlanta United can play a little better in the league on the road. I would like Atlanta United to advance in the Open Cup, but if that doesn't happen, then I would also be fine with that just because that's one less thing to have to worry about in terms of fixture congestion. So I think that overall this team, just because of how quickly they started with some of the games and the Minnesota game and some of the just goal-scoring onslaughts that they've had, I think now my expectations might be higher than they were at the beginning of the season. But even then, I think that still this team has outperformed a lot of what, you know, I think Atlanta United fans will obviously probably tell you something different, but, you know, just fans of MLS and fans of teams in MLS would probably tell you that Atlanta United has been a very pleasant surprise.
I think I'd give them a B. I mean, it's really good that they're in a playoff spot at the midway point. Tata Martino was saying post game that, you know, he thinks that, especially early in the season, they gave away points that could put them, that could have put them, you know, one or two spots higher. I think he might have said two or three spots higher. Basically, he thinks this team should be in fourth, is what I got from it. They should be right in the hunt, you know, with the likes of Toronto and NYCFC, definitely above Orlando. I agree with him. I think that, and that's why I gave him a B, is because as great as it's been at home, it's been really bad at away, and they got to figure out a way to not be. They can't play with these peaks and valleys that they're playing right now. They can't be so up and down away from home. They got to find some consistency in that. They got to find a way to take away at least a point on the road, and then win a few of them. They don't have to win every one, but they have to find a way to, you know, for the most part, try to take one and then steal three whenever the opportunity presents itself. Otherwise, you know, we're banking on being able to win those home games, those, what, six straight home games toward the end of the season, the 7 out of 10 at home to finish the season. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to put yourself in a position where you have to win those home games. You want to win those home games, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, you don't want to. It's like taking advantage of your opportunities early. You want to put those chances away so that you can relax more towards the end of the game, or not have to play under so much pressure that the other team could pull out a draw. But
yeah, and I think one thing too that the reason Atlanta United has been so much better at home than they have been on the road is because the fan support has just been unreal. And you know, you go to a place like Washington where they're at, you know, or D.C., you know, rather, where they had, you know, some trouble with attendance and stuff. And a lot of people said that crowd was dead at RFK. So I think that just different environments can lead to you maybe coming out a little bit differently in terms of your being fired up or whatever for a game. And playing in front of the home crowd has been something that has definitely spurred this team on to some very good results.
So here's the good news for Atlanta United looking forward. They sit with 24 points, sixth in the East. Columbus Crew, again, who they face on Saturday, has 25. So a win will leapfrog Atlanta United over them. Depending on how Orlando City does, they could potentially leapfrog Orlando City and put themselves in fourth place. And again, this is a team that was in eighth a week ago. So definitely doing great in terms of moving up the standings, and really what you need to do once you've kind of established yourself as a playoff team is just remain consistent and maintain. I think that's the one thing we're yet to see, and that's part of the reason you got to go and try to take some points, at least a point on most of these away games, try to steal some whenever you can. The U.S. Open Cup, what would you prioritize more, the U.S. Open Cup or the game on Saturday against Columbus?
Game on Saturday. I just think that in your first season you know, making the playoffs would be such a huge thing for this team, for this fan base, for, you know, the future. That's the thing. They've been doing a great job, obviously, selling season tickets and selling out these games. And you want to keep that momentum rolling. So if this team makes the playoffs in year one, I think that's only going to increase the hype and increase the buzz surrounding this team going into year two. So I definitely think that prioritizing the league is more important. But correct me if I'm wrong here, winning the Open Cup gets you in the CONCACAF Champions League, correct?
Yeah, and that's why I – in this case,
that's the only thing that makes me a little hesitant to go all in on saying I would prioritize the league, just because getting into the CONCACAF Champions League is huge. And obviously, the American teams, the MLS teams, have not had success in that tournament. And somebody has got to break through at some point. An MLS team is going to have to win that tournament sooner rather than later, just to increase the brand awareness, so to speak, because playing in that Club World Cup is becoming a bigger deal.
Well, look, and that's where I disagree with you. I think on Wednesday they got to prioritize. I think Saturday, play whoever hasn't played. Give every one of your international players, your DPs, give them a rest. Give them all a rest if you can.
Oof.
Just completely consider that game a wash. Focus on the U.S. Open Cup on Wednesday. Get past that Miami FC. Look to the next round, and then focus on San Jose. If they can win all three, great. I don't think it's going to happen, especially since Columbus is away. Columbus is actually a team that could really destroy Atlanta United on the road, even with all the first team guys. But a team like San Jose, who's going through a little bit of turmoil right now, that's a game that they could really finish. They could go into the break, into that Gold Cup break, on a high note. And I think you focus on U.S. Open Cup. Because, again, leaving your first year with a trophy, that's a great sign. And we mentioned CONCACAF Champions League, the potential to get into that the Club World Cup, which, you know, you say it's becoming more kind of a bigger deal. I kind of disagree. I think no one really cares about it to begin with. But the trophy is what I'm more concerned with. If you can find a way to leave with a trophy year one, that to me is a huge deal. That to me is one of the signs of success you can kind of hang your hat on year one, along with everything else, along with the playoff run they're going to make. And, you know, who knows beyond that? I mean, look, Supporters Shield's not out of the conversation completely. It's not like they're way behind or too far behind where they couldn't make a run. You know, they still have an entire half of the season left. Toronto's not going to keep going on this hot streak for the rest of the season. At least I don't anticipate them to. NYCFC, the same. And those are the two teams that I think you really have to worry about in terms of battling for that spot, if you can get yourself back into that conversation. But for
according to a lot of these comments, I am in the minority here. I think one guy I see says that he cares very little about the U.S. Open Cup. But then, like, four comments in a row are like, nope, got to prioritize the U.S. Open Cup. So I would agree that if you can get a trophy, and that's the thing, if they win this game on Wednesday, then I definitely think you start to pay closer and closer attention to the U.S. Open Cup. I think, obviously, a lot rides – well, duh, if you lose the game, you're not in the tournament anymore. But I think I do kind of agree with what you said, and not that I'm changing my tune. I still think the league is probably a little more important. But getting a trophy in year one would be just almost immeasurably huge for this team.
I'll put it this way. If you go into Columbus, you play guys that you think you can pull out a draw with. I'm not saying that'll happen, but I think you play who you need to in order to do your best to pull out a draw, earning that 1 point. Then you have your guys like Almiron, your Joseph Martinez. Although Joseph Martinez has had enough time off, so I think he might play regardless. But a guy like Yamil Assad, a guy like Larunowicz, who has played seemingly the entire season nonstop. Give Perez a night off. I'm trying to think who else. Those guys, that core of your team, are the guys you probably shouldn't play, or at least I wouldn't play against Columbus. Put in guys you think you can pull out a draw, and let the chips fall where they may, because that game away, we know how tough it's going to be. Let's just consider it. Let's just call it what it is. It's more than likely going to be a loss, especially with the trend that this team has kind of had on the road. Focus on San Jose. Win on Wednesday. Focus on San Jose. Go into the break on a high note, and then go kick Orlando's butt you know, 2 weeks in a row after that break. One thing we didn't talk about is the U.S. men's national team roster. Greg Garza snubbed, and Brad Guzan going to be that first team keeper, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting roster. When I saw it initially, it's like the Bruce Arena is clearly just trying to look at the kind of the depth of the current setup of you know players that he will look to select for the World Cup next you know summer. Granted, you know USA still has to qualify for the World Cup, but I think that this is probably a lot of this is looking at filling out the roster because you know the players that are going to be in Russia, your Michael Bradleys, your Clint Dempseys, and I think a lot of this is just looking at some other guys to kind of you know fill out the rest of the roster and. You know, the forward positions, I think Juan Agudelo getting back into the thick of things in U.S. Consideration is great. I love seeing Dom Dwyer get that call up. You know, Jordan Morris is a guy who, you know, needs to continue his development because there are plenty of U.S. men's national team attacking options right now, especially with the emergence of Christian Pulisic. And that was interesting to not see him in this roster, but certainly I do think that this is really just trying to figure out sort of the filling out the lineup for Russia next summer.
Looking specifically at Garza, well, him not being included in this line in this roster means he's more likely not going to be in the World Cup.
I would agree.
In Russia,
unless he just goes on a ridiculous run of form and gives Bruce Arena no choice.
Here's the thing, I mean. If Atlanta doesn't sign him, I don't think he's going to be a position where he's going to have a lot of playing time in with Tijuana. I think he goes back and he's, you know, back to the normal self. Sure, they liked what they saw, but he fits a specific system in Atlanta and he fits it well. But that position he plays, that system he fits, isn't utilized by the U.S. men's national team. It is in a sense, but you don't have the fullbacks bombing. So be suicidally high like Atlanta United has them do. You don't have them pressing and using that same energy. You have better tactical players who have been playing those positions longer. I don't think it's necessarily a snub. He's been playing well for Atlanta United. I don't know that translates directly to the U.S. men's national team, and I don't know that he beats out the players that are already on that team. And that's where I think I don't really see it as a snub. I see it as a – honestly, it's a good thing for Atlanta United because now you don't have him going off for 2 weeks playing, risking injury. You know, he's gonna be allowed to rest for 2 weeks. That's a positive for me. For Guzan, go. Get that goalkeeper get actual game experience as a number one with a new team. It's going to be a similar situation to what you're going to face in Atlanta once – I mean, not super – it's not going to be completely different. Or completely similar, but it's going to be different enough or similar enough to where you're going to have to get accustomed to playing with different players, finding ways to communicate
with different
players.
Well, it's so funny because we've never, as this is Atlanta United's first season, we've never really had that kind of conundrum of your team calling up U.S. men's national team players or not calling them up. And it's so funny because obviously for Greg Garza, I would love it if he got on the U.S. men's national team just for him, but as a fan of Atlanta United and being selfish about it, I agree with you. It's United that Cars is going to get these 2 weeks off.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you, man. Any final thoughts? That's all I had.
You know, just wanted to bring up the Confed Cup games coming up. Is it Wednesday and Thursday are the semifinals with Portugal and Chile on one side and Germany and Mexico on the other side. I think that I've watched a lot of this Confed Cup. It's been interesting. The VAR coming into play on a few things. VAR actually got somebody from Cameroon sent off, which was kind of weird, you know, going back and reviewing a foul to see if it was a yellow card or a red card. That certainly is something that I didn't know that VAR would go that in depth. So I like VAR for goals. I don't like it for really anything else. And that's the thing. We saw the offside against Chile, which caused them to have a goal taken back Again, I don't even think I would like offsides. Or offside, rather. I think the only thing I want VAR for, and they even have goal line technology for this, but just tell me what a goal is and what it isn't. I don't like it for the more that I've thought about it, I don't like it for offside, because that call that got called back from Chile was so close. I do think he was offside, but at the same time, I mean, that's such a bang-bang play that if the linesman doesn't see it in real time, that really stinks that obviously they got it taken away from them. So the Confed Cup's been very interesting to me, and then the semifinals are two great matchups. I know Germany kind of brought a B-squad, but the rest of these teams, you know, your Chiles, your Portugals, and Mexico have brought really good squads to this tournament. So I think that these two semifinal games are going to be really good.
If you got any questions for us on the Dirty South Soccer Facebook live feed, all caps, we'll stick around for the next 5 minutes or so, answer those questions. I don't like VAR. I think it works in football and in baseball and in basketball, because you have those natural stoppages in play. And with soccer, you don't. Not as consistently, at least. And so I think that alone is enough for me to say, look, after a goal scored, fine. Here's the thing. You can't use VAR to overturn an offside. I think if you can't use it to overturn incorrectly called offside call, then I think you shouldn't be allowed to use it for reviewing whether someone was onside or offside.
I totally agree with that.
I think, look, just leave it alone. Use it just for goals. See if it crossed the line. Goal line technology is fine. That's good enough for me. I don't need anything else. Look, as much as the ref sucked on Saturday for Atlanta United, and he was really bad, I don't crap on MLS officials very often, because I think for the most part, it's not just MLS officials, it's officials in general. Saturday was atrocious. Saturday was beyond bad. And he's a guy that has been suspended for letting plays go on, like not giving fouls to specific teams in the past. He's had troubles in his officiating career. I think that was back in 2015. So he has kind of a reputation, and I think last night was a prime example of that reputation Saturday was a prime example of that reputation. But I like the human element in soccer worldwide. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I agree. And, it was funny because I've kind of had my thoughts kind of change from time to time on this. I keep thinking about it, and I keep kind of, I don't know, going back and trying to really put a solid opinion on it. But I think it'll continue to change until they kind of figure out exactly how they're going to use this. But one thing that I found funny with the Confed Cup has been Mark Geiger has been in some pretty high profile he's been involved in some high-profile decisions during this Confed Cup, and it's like, we've known stateside for a while the frustration that comes with Mark Geiger, so now it seems like the rest of the world is figuring that out.
Well, he's always been an international referee, so I don't know what they see in him, but apparently it's enough to give him some prime jobs, officiating CONCACAF games, Confederation.
And there it
games.
Is right there on the comments on the Facebook live video. Saturday was Geiger-esque.
No, it was worse than Geiger, man. It was I don't even want to pronounce I can't even pronounce his name. I don't even know what it's like, Slavic or something like that, but it was beyond Geiger. It was bad. It was worse than that Mexico Panama game, honestly.
Ooh.
Was it Panama or Costa Rica? It was Panama, right?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Panama. Anyways, that'll do it for us. Anything else, Sam?
No, other than, enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy U.S. Open Cup. Enjoy the game against Columbus. And I'm looking forward to July 4th at Bobby Dye. That's going to be fun. Obviously, the huge fireworks show that they're going to put off over at Centennial Olympic Park, which will coincide pretty much right with the end of the game. So definitely looking forward to being over at Bobby Dye on July 4th to bring in the birthday of America. Eric, I'm warning you now, when you see me in the press box on July 4th, I have purchased the most awesome July 4th shirt ever, so I'm going to be making a lot of people jealous in the Bobby Dodd press box coming up a week from tomorrow.
Someone asked me what the best way to get cheap tickets for July 4th was, and I told them to kill someone and take their tickets.
Yeah, or
that might be the best way.
Or get in a time machine and jump back in time and buy season tickets.
Yeah, I don't advise anyone to actually do that. I'm totally kidding. but knowing
we
someone,
do not advocate yeah. or we do not condone murder
Relax.
Here on the Mouth of the South.
That'll do it for us. We're not sure exactly what we're going to do again for U.S. Open Cup that night. We possibly, depending on the time, depending on the schedules, we might do something post game. But we'll definitely have something for you out Thursday night, Friday morning, in preparation for Columbus, recapping U.S. Open Cup. Hopefully we're talking about a win on Wednesday. But until then, take it easy, Atlanta.
Peace out.